glad you're here. Not on happyproductions.live. That's what I used to always say when we started these things. I am Grant Glad. I'm here with my guest, Ross Thorne, the one, the only. Ross, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Do I sound all right?
You do sound all right. Okay. Yeah. You can even bring it even closer to your face. Yeah. You're golden. We're figuring this out. This is the first Glad You're Here podcast recorded in this very echoey room that I chose. So this will go well. Ross, so welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for making the trip over here to the other side of Duluth.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. So Ross, you have been doing the music thing for about how long now?
It's been in kind of different phases, honestly. I've been playing and performing music, quote-unquote professionally, like paid gigs, maybe about 10 years. But like I took some of that was during undergrad, yep. And then I took time off for grad school and didn't really do any gigs there. And then once I got back up here, it was kind of on the books again. I was able to like fit it into my schedule and do the scene up here. So kind of 10 years in total, but like more like maybe 4 or 5 years, and then up here again another 5 years, I guess.
So you lived a life
exactly.
I imagine grad school takes a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not something I was even smart enough to sniff at, but yeah, I have to.
So they let me in, so they'll let anybody in.
They'll let you through the door. What'd you go to grad school for?
Cartography.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Okay, so, dude, so when I was in elementary school, we were studying cartography, because that's like the, I don't even know how to put it, like the planes and like how up and down maps go. Am I right? Am I wrong?
No. Yeah. You're partially, that's like part of cartography. Map. Okay. Mine is more like map design, but the big part of that is how the world is projected onto two-dimensional spaces.
Got it.
Because the map or the world is not two-dimensional as much as some people like to tell.
I wish it was. It'd be so much easier. I made my science teacher cry when we were studying cartography on accident. She made these like boxes out of like shoe boxes, and they had little holes in the top, and she gave us all a stick, and then you're supposed to like stick it through the hole, and then you'd measure how long it was to like study the cartography of the what was underneath. Right?
Oh.
She had like, I don't know, like putty or something under
there.
And I kept stabbing it down, and I was stabbing too hard, so I just got the same measurement every time, and I was putting holes in the bottom of these things that she had like worked really hard on. And then after class, I was like, I think I did this wrong, and she thought I was just being a smartass, and then she was crying, and really, I felt really bad.
Oh my gosh.
Like, to the point where I still remember that because of cartography. At least I'm pretty sure it was cartography.
Well, because I mean, it sounds like you were measuring like the topography of the landscape, and you were making a map of it without having to see it.
Yes.
That's really cool.
Exactly.
That's a really cool project.
So that's why I made her
cry. I feel bad for your teacher.
She probably put a lot of time into it.
She's like, this is really cool, and this Grant kid just keeps poking holes in it.
I felt so bad. I didn't even try to. Wasn't even trying to be a smartass. The one time, you know? I mean, there were plenty of times where I probably should have made her cry and didn't, and then this time is the one. So that's my experience with cartography. Okay, so me and cartography aside, so you've been doing music for about 10 years professionally, off and on, with, you know, some real life in there. Not that music's not real life, but mm-hmm. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
So how did you get started with music? Because I know you kind of come from a musical family, because mm-hmm. your brother does music as well. So was it at home all the time, or what was it like growing up?
Yeah. Very musical family. I've got my brother, who's older than me, also a musician. We took piano lessons when we were younger. We sang in church choirs, and my grandma had a karaoke bar. So it was just all sorts of different forms of music when we were growing up. And then my cousin ended up, he started a band, I think, in like high school or something too. So and then once we got into school programs that had music, we would do those too. So
geez, you got it in every angle.
Yeah,
because there's so many people that are just like, oh, you know, I grew up in the church and we played music in church, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing. Or, you know, you learn it from being around your parents,
right,
or just whatever. But then you have the karaoke bar tied in there.
Yeah.
So did you get to like go and hang out and do sets at the karaoke bar?
Yeah. Essentially, my grandma's bar was on like this isthmus between two lakes, and a little geography, cartography term for the listeners there. It's a strip of land between two lakes. But we would go swimming there, like, in the summers, and then we would just go over to the bar. She'd make us, like, cheeseburgers, and we would just turn on the karaoke machine, play pool and stuff. And
that's awesome.
I guess that's... yeah, it's kind of weird, like, growing up now and seeing, like, oh, yeah, we just hung out in a bar for a lot, like, when we were, like, 12.
Pretty Midwest.
Right, yeah, right? I was just going to say, it's, like, it's not totally normal, but it's at least more normal in Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly. And... You're playing pull tabs at the bar. Yeah, right. Everyone knows what that's all about. Yeah. Yeah, we've all been there. Well, because also in Wisconsin, your parents can buy you a beer, mm-hmm. right? So why not hang out at the bar? Right. Why not? You don't even have
no
to
one cares.
No,
yeah.
No one cares at all. That's cool because you also get. Well, so let me back up before I talk out of my ass. So what kind of music were you like listening to and shaped by and kind of drawn to back then when you had all these different influences to kind of choose from?
Yeah, it was a wild mix. So my dad is like 40 years older than me, and we would listen to the oldies station a ton while we were in the car. And then he had CDs and tapes of like Johnny Cash, Neil Diamond, and Jimmy Buffett. Those are like the big three that always stick out to me that he had. So we would do that, but then my mom, like, we would listen to the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack, and we'd listen to the Dixie Chicks, now the Chicks, and which I listened back to that album last year, and it was like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is even better than I thought it was. Yeah. Like, it was catchy, like, you know, Goodbye Earl, and there's all these great tracks on there, but like, and as a kid, you don't fully appreciate how good they are, but they're fun to sing along with. And then I go listen to them, and I was like, holy crap, like, this is an amazing record.
We peaked as a culture in the 90s. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Seriously, though, like, you're so... those songs are so deceptively good mm-hmm. because they're so catchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's probably a decent way to describe your stuff, too, because it has this catchy... you know, surface to it, but then underneath there's so many layers of what's going on, which makes sense given everything that you're saying about, you know, how you grew up on Johnny Cash and the Chicks in a church choir and the karaoke bar.
Like, yeah, yeah, totally. Like, the influences are definitely just, like, all over the place.
Yeah, which is super cool and creates layers, like a map.
Yeah, exactly. GIS.
GIS.
Geographic information systems.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah, thanks for not letting me try and pretend that I knew it.
Yeah, no.
Because it would have been bad.
The big thing in that is that you have layers. And it's like, wow, you don't need an overhead projector to look at all these things. But yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. So when did you start playing music? How old were you when you kind of like picked up a guitar or whatever instrument it was?
Yeah, I think it was about first grade that I actually did piano lessons until probably like fifth or sixth grade.
Got it.
Somewhere around there, and a few different teachers, like teachers would move or whatever. And then I went to this rock and well, it was called college camp at this community college, Nicolet College in Rhinelander, where near where I grew up. And they had like kind of gave you this college experience. You'd sign up for these different courses, and then you'd go on around the campus. And one of them was like introduction to rock and roll. So we went and did that, and I learned how to play drums there. And that was super fun. And then when I got to middle school, I played in the percussion section and then into high school as well and did choir and started to pick up guitar on my own in high school, I'd say.
Jeez.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I've heard that piano to drums is a natural progression because they're both so percussive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Did that feel natural to you going from piano to the drums?
Kind of. Well, I don't know if necessarily, I think it was just more of the fun parts of the drums.
Yeah.
And I had more fun because I felt like I was maybe better with just rhythm in general than I was at like picking guitar. So yeah, I think there's something to that is like you get the rhythm of piano pretty well. And it's like the same like downward motion with your hands.
Yeah.
Turning like your fingers out to holding sticks. And so.
Yeah. Well, and you have to use your feet.
Yeah,
two things you get to use your feet
for. Yep, true, true. Yeah, yeah.
The only real instruments like that, I mean, you hand a guitar player a pair of drumsticks and they don't know what to do, right? Like, it's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Okay, so what you're describing is you were basically built to be the perfect musician from the start. So
you'd think I'd be way better at like some stuff than I actually am. Like my guitar playing is pretty mid, to be honest.
You can get away with that though with the type of music you do.
Yeah,
it works.
Yeah,
yeah, but it also it covers. I don't know if mid is the right word for it. I'm not gonna let you be self whatever the word is, defacing. That's not
deprecating.
Deprecating. Thank you. Too self-deprecating at it, because you play what needs to be played on the guitar. Yeah. You don't play too much. And, you know, yeah, maybe Eddie Van Halen is technically a better guitar player than you, but I don't want to hear it.
Right, yeah.
Right? Nothing against Van Halen. It's just...
Yeah, my philosophy is that, like, the guitar is sort of just the means to get a song out. And so, like, when I'm playing guitar, I'm not trying to be incredible at guitar. I'm trying to be a good performer and mostly songwriting and doing that. So I have other people who sit in that are way better at guitar if I need a good guitar player, you know.
Smart move. Yeah, and then you can focus on the thing that you really care about.
Yeah, for sure.
Were you drawn to songs right away, like when you started doing piano lessons, or did it come later?
Like songwriting?
Yeah.
It kind of came later. I think probably with the guitar. Is when, because my brother had gotten a bass and he had gotten a guitar as well too later. And that was sort of the attraction, was just like messing around and like, oh, this sounds cool. Like, do that again. Like, this doesn't sound like a song we've heard before.
Yeah.
And so then that sort of collaborative songwriting and just a jamming session, came about.
That's pretty sweet. Well, and then your brother was, so are you older or younger than your brother?
I'm younger.
You're younger, yeah. But how much?
About 2.5 years.
Okay, that's the perfect difference like a family band.
Yep, because we were in high school together and stuff like that. So it was really great.
Nice. So he was out there kind of paving the way and like talking your parents into letting him have electric guitars and things around the house.
Yeah. Right? Yep. Our mom was actually probably just really into it anyways. Like, she was the one who wanted us to do piano lessons and wanted us to be involved with music. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had the Dude, what? So you get the supportive family. Mm-hmm. You get the church experience. Like, this is every Rolling Stone interview ever tied into one. Everybody goes to those things. They're like, well, I grew up in the church. Or, you know, sometimes you do hear, my grandma owned a bar and I got to hang out. Or my brother was a guitar player. My mom encouraged me. Mm-hmm. I listened to all right. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
All that to say, so you're starting to be influenced come high school. You're starting to write your own songs. Do you remember the first song you wrote? Was it good? Was it bad?
This is actually really funny because I just had my 30th birthday party and show, and I played some songs that I don't write anymore, or that I don't play anymore. Early songs that I had written. The first song I wrote, we would mostly do like parodies of songs.
Oh, nice.
So like we'd start off with that. Like Weird Al like was also a big influence because it's just so fun to listen to. But then it's just like, oh, like I can change the words to this song, and like you kind of like dip your toe in with that. And then in high school we had this band where we made, it was a weird mix of music. Like we did some rap songs, we did some like I did some love songs, but they were mostly funny, except for like the one acoustic heartfelt song that I wrote, and I was like, I don't know, this is kind of embarrassing. It was called What About Love, and it was like, so it was like if you took like Chris Daughtry's music and like made it like so bland, like whether or not you like Chris Daughtry or not, but like if you just turn the blandness way up and it's just like the most generic lines, like that was it. But it was, you know, there was something I was like, oh, there's a catchy melody. But yeah, that was kind of the first, that was the first, I'd say, full song that I wrote.
There's always something to them, mm-hmm. right? Like even when they're a lame take on a Chris Daughtry song, like there's still, like you said, there's something. There might've been a melody in there or something, because you keep going. If they were just the, like so embarrassing that they're awful.
Yeah.
I mean, and sometimes they are, right? But that's what keeps you going, is mm-hmm. the melody. It's I describe it sometimes like, do you golf?
No.
Me neither. I hate golf, but I think it's perfect because people that do love golf, I've asked them about this before, like, what do you like this game? Because it just makes me angry and I'm not good at it and I don't have the time to put in to be good at it. Yeah. So it's like, it's that one shot down the fairway. You get that one good shot down the fairway, sure. and then you keep coming back and you get hooked. I think it's the same thing with songwriting, right? It's that one, you get that one person that's like, oh, that's kind of good. Yep. You know, when you play it, and you're
totally.
Like, I'm going to keep doing this.
Yeah, that one element that like either you like or someone else tells you that they like, and you're like, I can do this.
I can do it.
And that, yeah, I had some moments like that early on in songwriting. So I wrote a few things in high school, but then like, once college came around, just like chilling in the dorms with friends and trying to get better at guitar, I would write, and then I wrote this song, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is pretty decent, like, and I actually like it.
Yeah.
And I'm not embarrassed, you know, like, that's actually part of all of, like, I'm always embarrassed about songs in some way, because it's very it's like invulnerable. It's not embarrassment maybe as much as it is just vulnerability in, like, sure, kind of putting yourself out there like that. And with that first song that I had wrote, and like feeling that vulnerability, is like, oh, don't listen to that song, listen to one of the funnier ones, because it's like way easier to put that out there, but that rather than like a heartfelt something. But yeah, then like in college, I wrote this one song called Fly that was, I was really enjoying. I wrote the brother, or the chorus with my brother in the car, and we were, it was really cool. And I actually still kind of like that song. It's more Jason Mraz-y, that sort of feel to it.
Yeah.
Which I don't really write that way anymore, but I still dig. So.
Yeah, it's still good music. Mm-hmm. Is it going to make it on a Ross Thorn record one of these days?
No, I don't think so. No, it's good. Yeah, that one just lives in my head and yeah, for throwback performances, I guess.
That's fair. All right, we can you can only catch Fly if you catch Ross Thorn live, yeah. Everybody. And then that is the song that you're going to want to yell out from the back, or just write it on a $20 bill and hand it to him.
There you go. I'll play it for sure.
That's the best way to get him to play Fly, so you can hear what it sounds like. All right, so when you started songwriting, who were kind of your guys, you know, or girls, or mm-hmm, you know, what have you? So I know it sounds like you have a lot of different influences to choose from. What were you drawn to, like, when you picked up the guitar? Like, I want to write songs. What mm-hmm were you like? I want to write songs like this.
Yeah, it's definitely changed so much. But there's all sorts of things. Like I mentioned, like the Oh Brother Where Art Thou stuff early on listening. I didn't want to write songs like that until like recently.
Yeah.
But like probably the main one was like Jack Johnson. I listened to a ton of Jack Johnson. I love Jack Johnson. I love playing Jack Johnson. And so I was like, oh man, like it's like he's got a beautiful voice, like this very mellow and like gorgeous guitar playing with some like some have like some bluesy influences too. And so he's got like this spectrum. And I was like, yeah, this is I want to write music like that.
Yeah. Dang, you are like a time capsule of the early
2000s. Yeah, I know. For real.
Jason Mraz, Jack mm-hmm Johnson, Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack.
Yep.
Yeah. Who's the guy who produced the Oh Brother Where Art Thou? T-Bone Burnett. Do you like his stuff?
I've never really listened to him.
Ooh, dude. You don't even have to listen to his solo stuff. Just like everything that he produces okay is gold. He produced that, and then he produced, you like Counting Crows?
Yeah.
August and Everything After?
Okay.
He's the producer on that.
Wow, okay.
It's one of those strange rabbit holes where once you look for T-Bone Burnett, you'll see him in all of these like multi-platinum records.
Wow.
All incredible.
What a name, too. T-Bone.
Come on. Could you imagine trying to get away with that? Like, hey, I'm T-Bone. Yeah. I don't have the balls for that.
Yeah. Just like, hey, you guys should start calling me T-Bone now. Like, just a self-proclaimed nickname.
Yeah, just start saying it, and then eventually it's true.
Yeah.
That's how that works, I guess. So we're here with T-Bone Thorn.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So we've been talking about, you know, where you came from and your songwriting process and kind of all of that. But maybe it's probably a good time. I made you drag that banjo all the way over.
Yeah.
Here. Do you want to show the people what a Ross Thorn song might sound like?
Sure.
All
this
right.
This is a far cry from some of the things that we were talking about with Jason Mraz and Jack Johnson type songs. Yeah, so I picked up the banjo last May and have been playing since. Getting dialed in there? Getting good? Okay, cool. And I started writing on it immediately, and it was really fun to just unlock new parts of writing, like with the open tunings and modal tunings, that I was like, oh, I'm hearing things that I don't just hear on guitar.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll play some tunes here that this first one I'll do is, let's see if I can get warmed up.
Yeah, do it.
It's changed some names, but I think the current name of it is called First Class Clown Wagon.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's just a instrumental old time tune.
Love it. Take it away, man. ¶¶ Hell yeah, dude.
Thank you, thank you.
Jeez, how long have you been playing banjo for?
Since last May, so...
Okay, so you're
10
not,
months.
10 months, not even a full year yet.
Yeah, oh. It's been so much fun.
That's awesome. Rumor has it you're taking lessons over at the Northerly.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Kyle over at Northerly.
Yeah, so Springworks. Kyle's a friend of mine, and he's played with me, and he was looking to fill a spot in a banjo workshop, like a group lesson. I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. And so I borrowed a banjo to do it, and I just really loved it. And like seeing myself, it's kind of like what you were saying too, of like keeping going with songwriting and having that one thing that's drawing you back, like seeing my slow progress, but still progress in doing the banjo, was like just kind of addicting. And it was so fun to do and fun to write on, like I was saying, hearing things that I have that I don't hear when on guitar. And I was, like I said, I never had a passion for guitar. I was kind of getting just like plateaued with it and not really interested in getting that better at it. But banjo sort of changed that.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the guitar is, like you said, it's just a vessel to write the songs, right? Did it feel, as someone who learned multiple instruments growing up, when you, did you keep learning instruments before you went to the banjo, or did you like learn the guitar, stop learning new things for a little while, and then learn banjo? The reason I ask, I'm curious if it felt different learning it as an adult, like more experienced, well-rounded musician, compared to doing it, you know, as more of an amateur beginner type thing.
Yeah, after guitar, it didn't get too different. There was ukulele. You know, and so, and it's kind of the similar thing for picking up banjo, in ways that like you're learning different chord shapes. So like there's at least new parts of your brain that are like, okay, now this is how a C chord shape is on this instrument. And here's, you know, whatever. But that was still strumming, and that was still pretty easy, less strings. And same thing with the banjo, but the banjo I'm learning clawhammer style. So that was sort of like this new, like everything on the left hand translates in guitar, because I'm right-handed, and so everything that's like holding the neck and hitting the frets translates really well. But then like the claw hammer is a totally different motion, and it like starting that brand new, I was like, I sound terrible, but like it gets a little bit better every time, every group lesson. I was like, oh, that's fun. Yeah. That's really cool if you can get that going.
And yeah, and then it's a whole, I mean, like you said, it's a whole other tool in your toolbox.
Yeah.
And now you can just write, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It frees you up, I imagine, for when you have a song idea and you're like, oh, I kind of want that to sound like X. I want this to have this like Southern Gothic twang.
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard to get on just an acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a banjo, you can be like, all right, I can find it and I can build it from
there. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's letting you color the way your songs should feel. Which is a fun little instrument and a fun little tool to kind of tweak.
Yeah. And okay, we've been talking for a while and we haven't even talked about your record that came out in 2023. So Hugo was the most recent Ross Thorne record. Now, the reason I bring it up is there was some banjo on there, right?
No banjo
on there.
Okay. No banjo at all.
So, okay, when you go back and listen to that now, are you like, man, I wish I could put some banjo on there? Or are you one of those guys who's like, you made it and you're happy with, you know?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some songs that could have used it. Like the song South of Somewhere could be far grassier.
Yeah.
But I think the way that it came out, I'm still happy with it.
Because it's a kick-ass record.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, like I think the exciting part is to now, like, my next record is going to have like just a shit ton of banjo.
Yeah,
you know, so it's not like gonna be like some more traditional sounding tunes like that one that's are strictly like two parts and it just repeats.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like Like the Long Violent History, Tyler Childers record, you know?
Great record.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But it was like such a out of left field after his second record too.
Yeah.
Mine will be a little bit of just like kind of the same vein that I've already been writing into.
Yeah. All right. I love that you touched on that Tyler Childers record because Long Violent History, the song itself at the end of that record, mm-hmm. is it might be my favorite. I don't want to call it political, but it's
mm-hmm.
you know what I mean.
Like, yeah, I'd say it is.
Political. It's mm-hmm. yeah. It just feels like a cheapened word for what that song is.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah,
but it's like my favorite of that. And you are another one of my writers that's incredible at that style of writing with like South of Somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm getting at is it's political without feeling political, and it's not preachy, and it's not mm-hmm. talking to one side or the other. It's just mm-hmm. like, hey, we're all in this, you know, kind of together type of thing, except for billionaires on yachts, which that's their problem.
Yeah.
And so I definitely can see some Tyler Childers influence there, because a lot of people. I went to the Did we get the Jason Isbell show last night?
No, I was not.
I went to that. Nice. I love Jason Isbell.
Yeah.
I don't like when Jason Isbell writes political songs.
Really? Interesting.
I know. And well, the thing about it is, I agree with the message he's trying to convey,
mm-hmm.
but the way that he conveys it always comes off as like, I don't think you changed anybody's mind here.
Sure.
Right? Like, I think what you did is just made people dig in their heels and on one side maybe and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough political. We might even cut this out because I hate.
Sure, yeah.
But basically what I'm saying is mm-hmm. that your influence has come through in a subtle way of just like you know what you want to say and how to say it. And that, I think, is a really cool aspect to have as a songwriter.
Thanks. Yeah. It takes some time, and it takes a lot of mulling over and a lot of taking in influences and taking in, like, reading. I read a ton. I guess I don't read a ton. I read, and that's where I get a ton of my inspiration is from reading. And so when I'm, like, working on a song, I will back pocket something, and then until I feel like something's right for it. So it's like everything is very, I don't write fast. Yeah. And I feel like if you feel like you need to write fast because you need to put out your next record, then you're not doing, I wouldn't be doing myself a service in that. I wouldn't be doing the songs a service.
For sure.
It would just be this, I'm just a songwriting machine, and I just need to get my next record out. And you know, people might say like, oh, but I'm like overflowing with artistic creativity. And that's great if you are. I'm not like, you know, like what we were talking about before is like, I have like other aspects of life that I'm very passionate about that I spend a lot of time on, you know? Yeah. So there's like my map making professional day job. I also am really into tabletop gaming and working on tabletop games and running tabletop games and just doing all sorts of different things that I don't really like. And it's just as, I should say, just as rewarding to express myself creatively through these other aspects than it is through songwriting.
Yeah, well, I think it's so important to have that. Guy mm-hmm. Clark built guitars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He had a workshop downstairs, did other things. If all you do is write, eventually you're just going to write about writing.
Yeah.
Because if you don't go out and live and have experiences, you don't have anything to really say. And I think I completely agree with you about like writing slow is the way to go. And then I bet you have this experience sometimes too. You write really slow, it's kind of like feels like it's trudging along, and then a song falls out.
Yeah,
it's
totally
out of the sky. Yep. And you're like, I don't expect that to happen, but thank God it did.
Yeah.
Right. And I think those you appreciate so much more when you're being deliberate and you're taking the time and working on the craft, because you kind of you put in the work for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like when people are like, I'm writing a song every single week, I'm like, okay, you're probably going to get a verse out of that song that is salvageable, and you should mm-hmm. probably take that and build on it, and don't assume that the first draft is complete.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so if you're writing slow, you're actually taking the time to go through and do that.
Yeah. And I should also say, like, you know, when someone does write like a song a week or something, like, it's incredible. It's great practice. Cause it's like, you know, it's something that is, people also think that like, oh, you're just so gifted and talented. It's like, no, this is like, it's practice. This is work.
Yes.
This is just as much work to get to a good point in songwriting as it is to build up your body to compete in sporting events or something.
100%.
You know, like, and sometimes maybe you'll have like a knack for it and a knack for like the awareness and inspiration that comes to helping you write a song. But like, for most of us, it's a practice.
It's work, and yeah. you gotta put in your hours.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, all right, I think I've asked this to everybody on the podcast, but at this point, what do you think your ratio is? And what I mean is, like, how many bad songs before you get a good one that you can consider good?
I kind of don't finish a song if you're not
feeling
liking
it.
Yeah. So like, I'm kind of batting 1,000, which is sounds way, you know, like a, I sound like a jerk, but it's more of like, because of the slow practice that I will not push something into a place where I'm not happy with it.
It's very intentional.
I will either like kind of just write these lines or write these licks or whatever. And I'm like, okay, this is usable. I'll pocket it in the ideas, you know, like notes folder or whatever. And then something will slowly start to accumulate, and I'm like, oh yeah, like I can use that line I used from before, and it still, you know, weeks go by, and then I'm pulling in like, oh, that was a great quote that I read in this novel, like,
yeah,
and that fits thematically. Let me like twist that a little bit. And so for the ratio of songs that I put out is like, I basically love every song that I put out.
That's awesome. That's how BJ Barham is from American Aquarium.
Oh, really?
He's the same process. He's just like, yeah, I don't finish it if I don't like it, but I'll take what is salvageable and use it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that comes into like, Jason Isbell's talked about how it's kind of at that point, it's like putting the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the pieces, you've coordinated it, now you just need to put it together so that it fits in the right way.
Yep.
Right? I think that's an awesome way to construct songs. So when you sit down to write, you're gonna write a song.
Mm-hmm.
Where I know you said you get ideas from like a novel, like a line might trigger it. Are you the type that takes that line, you're reading on the beach or whatever, you take it, you record it into your voice memo, whatever idea pops in.
Yeah.
And then when you sit at home, are you going to like sit in front of a notebook and write it out, or what's kind of the process after the idea has germ, you know, once you have the germ of the idea?
Yeah, it's probably like lyric, melody, and then like chords after that is sort of typically what I'll do. Is like if there's something that's inspirational and so striking to me that like I feel moved to write something, it'll kind of like start to at least the connecting parts of building all of the puzzle pieces, not necessarily completing the song, but it's like I can get lyrics and the lyrical message, the lyrical theme, the melodies and the chords and like some structures, like, and it's kind of set. So there's a song that I wrote last year that's actually on my when is this releasing?
If I would love to tell you that I have my shit together.
Yeah, no worries, no worries. I just didn't know if I should plug the Blue Ox competition.
Definitely plug the Blue Ox competition. Yeah.
Well, I'm up for the Blue Ox competition, and the song that we recorded for the Blue Ox competition was a beautiful song to me that I wrote last year.
Can I pet that dog?
No, it's not. Can I pet that dog? This lyrical masterpiece, Can I Pet That Dog? Yeah, we should talk about that too. That's been funny.
Yeah.
But no, it's called Baby That's All I Need. And the context of when I wrote this song, I just love it because it also is like a good blueprint for like when I do some of these parts of that, whatever led up to the inspiration of the song, like I'm identifying the patterns of like my personal like state that is good for writing music.
Yeah.
And so I went for a walk in Oneonta Graveyard, Oneonta Cemetery. It's a beautiful cemetery and it has probably one of the best views of the city. I shouldn't say that because then other people will go there. And I don't get to walk around a graveyard all by myself.
We'll bleep out the name of the graveyard.
Redacted. But then after that, I went down to Lake Superior and it started just downpouring. And I went for a swim in the storm and it was like if you've never swam in Lake Superior in a storm, you definitely should safely. I should say that too. But it is like when the waves are so powerful and like just lifting you up and like just tossing you around, it is surreal. But then, so after that experience, I went home and like, I'm feeling amazing. Like, and I listened to Sigur Rós going down to the point too. And then coming back at home, like there was this bird just like eating a worm in the yard, and something as so mundane as that, and then like all combined with everything that I was feeling and the story that I had read called The Egg by Andy Ware, which was about like this sort of like unity and this connectivity between people and everything.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm like
touching the spirit, and I'm like starting to cry, and I was like, yeah, we're writing something now, you know. So then like some things kind of happen like that where I'll get that, and then I workshop it a little bit later, but like the lyric came first. It's like, I'm a bird in the yard picking worms now, honey, don't need brains, don't need money, do a little dance, you think I'm funny, baby, that's all I need. And it kind of like that whole theme of like, I am something that's not Ross Thorne, kind of just carries it throughout. And I love that song, and it just sort of came about with all that. And I don't know if that answers the original question.
That's beautiful, yeah. because you go and you get, you know, back to the puzzle analogy, you get your border, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go back and let it marinate for a little bit and take your time with it and go back and workshop whatever needs to be workshopped from there. I love that style. And then you're able to kind of capture that emotion and bring it into also the other things that you're experiencing in your life that you know will fit into that kind of what you were saying earlier. Yeah, okay. I love how a Ross Thorne song comes about. I see these are really baked with love, people. That is such a cool thing, and it really comes through in your music too, that there was thanks. Time put into this. Yeah, man. I mean, it's really apparent that you're not taking this craft lightly, which I think is super cool,
cuz
you know, songs do matter.
And my after like the first record, I wasn't really intending on releasing a record, and so I was writing all of those songs for me, and like for the process of songwriting, as therapeutic as that is, as well as just like listening and like back to your own songs and just vibing with them. And now I'm trying to make sure I keep that too, because now with a record out, it's like, okay, are you recording next? You know, like whatever. It's like, I am, but I also just got to remember, like, the songs are for me. They're on my own timeline. Yep. And so just keeping that at the forefront of writing them with love for myself and love for songwriting. And like, if other people like it, then like, that's just the best bonus ever.
Sure,
but it's not the core of it, you know?
Yeah, don't let assholes like me push you into it, because the first question I asked you is, when are you making another record?
No, it's still good conversation, but it's more of like me as an asshole, like not being like, oh yeah, I need to make something. I need to make it for these people that liked this song. Like, this was the best song that was record. I should push in that direction.
Yeah,
it's more of like, what am I thinking of? What am I experiencing right now? And guiding with that.
Yeah, and I imagine I'm gonna put some words in your mouth and just tell me to stop at any time if you're way off. But I have to imagine when your debut album gets the reception that it did and was like so well received and liked and like critically acclaimed, and you got the Trample, the opening slot, right? And you're like, wow, this is really doing well. You probably feel a little bit more of this external pressure of like, oh, I need to make, you know, another good thing. Then if honestly it would have came out and flopped. Right? Because then you would just be sitting at home writing songs and be back to what you were doing before it came out, right?
Probably. I think with the more eyes on the record and the Trampled Grant and performance, it's like this huge spike in the graph of where my quote-unquote success is, right? Yeah. Like that's a huge thing, but it's also now it's back down basically where it was, a little bit higher, you know, and the trajectory is slowly going up, and to remember that, you know, it was just like, it was fun, and it was an amazing experience, and I'm so grateful for it, but it's also just a stepping stone, and it shouldn't change much, you know?
Right, and just treating it like that, and, well, you're such a humble guy that it's not, you're going to be fine.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, you're good. Guys like me with an ego the size of the moon shouldn't have success. Shouldn't happen.
I don't think that's true. as far as your ego goes, but yes.
Thanks. Yeah. But I think it's really cool that you're every aspect of the music career, rather, right? You're approaching with intention the same way that you approach the songwriting, which is really a beautiful thing to see. It's kind of like we've talked off air before about like Willie Carlisle. It's a little bit kind of reminds me of that trajectory where I don't think you could pay Willie enough money to not write the songs he's writing, right? If you were like, hey, Willie, I'll give you $1 million and I just need you to go and write some Speakers Go Boom Boom songs.
Yeah.
I'd be like, not, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't.
There's something in you that's just like calling you to go in the direction you're going, and like you're still unveiling it, and it's, I agree.
Yeah. And there's something so cool about that. And it's, it's the side of the industry that I find fascinating compared to, and there's nothing against the other side. Like if you are a guy who churns out 20 songs a week for Music Row or whatever, that's a skill I will never touch with a 10-foot pole. That's a whole different skill set. However, I'm not as fascinated by it because it's a lot more formulaic, for lack of a better word, right? Yeah. Like once you figure out that formula, you can kind of repeat it. You can do it again.
Definitely.
Not to say that it's easy. Not to say that it's easy.
And it is what you want out of it too. But I feel the same way of like writing a pop song or writing something that's that's going to get a lot of like airplay because it's catchy or something. Like there's skills in that too, and like there's parts of the formula, but also can I shake it up enough that it's like does sound a little bit unique that can pull something, and I totally would respect anybody that does that. But I agree, it's just like I'm slow with my stuff because it's for me, because it's I'm trying to imbue it with as much intention and as much care that I can.
And I think that's beautiful, and that's probably a great time for us to take a second and thank some sponsors.
Yeah.
And then we'll be right back. And you want to play another song for the fine people out there that are listening?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you need to shop for a new car but can't find the time? Or maybe past experiences with shady dealerships and salespeople have made you avoid starting the search for your new vehicle altogether? Car Concierge gets it. That's why they exist. Car Concierge will work directly with you to understand what you are looking for in your ideal vehicle, then take the search on for you. That's right, save endless amounts of time and questions by working with Car Concierge, who will search, find, negotiate, and ultimately deliver your dream car directly to you without you having to step foot in a car dealership. Visit their website at GoCarConcierge.com or call 612-662-7788 to get started today.
Yeah.
I'm a bird in the yard picking worms now, honey. Don't need brains and don't need money. Do a little dance and think I'm funny. Baby, that's all I need.
Cool.
Alright, kick it off whenever.
Alright.
I'm a bird in the yard picking worms now, honey. Don't need brains, don't need money. Do a little dance and think I'm funny. Baby, that's all I need. I'm the moss in the tree growing slow and short. Never done less and never took more. I'll do mine and you do yours. Baby, that's all I need. We're all the same, just different faces, different names, different places. Only time will tell. Till then, I wish you well. I'm a worm in the grass and I'm covered in dirt. Just found out I was eaten by a bird. Maybe next time I'll do a good turn. Maybe that's all I need. I'm the moss.
Whoa, that's not it.
Maybe that's all I need. I'm a rose in the vase, cutting quick to fade. A thorn in your thumb and you're cursing all day. Leave me to your sweetheart just to hear him say, baby, that's all I need. We're all the same, just different faces, different needs, different graces, just as sweet by any other name. We're all the same, just different faces, different needs, different graces, just as sweet by any other name, any other name.
Hell yeah, dude. Damn. So, what was the name of that one again? Baby, That's All I Need. And we kind of buried the lead. That's probably not the right phrase for it. Whatever. About how that was submitted for the Blue Ox to try and play a Blue Ox. Blue Ox Music Festival in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Get TBA to Blue Ox.
Yep, which just, you know, the original marketing plan for the virtual band competition, essentially.
It was a good
move. It turned into
it was a good move. That is a beautiful song. And it actually, in a really cool way, kind of encompasses a lot of what you were just talking about.
It's one of those songs. I love it. It's when I had it. And this is actually sort of like what I use for a lot of songs when I write them is like, it's, I don't know if it's totally woo woo or not, but it's more like when I know that I've got a song that's like worth pursuing, is like, I'll start like crying when I'm like writing. I'm like, oh my gosh, that like is, you know, quote unquote, so beautiful or whatever, but it's just beautiful to me. You know, it's like something that's like really truly resonating with me. And like this line came out, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't keep it together. And I'm like, that's when I know that like I've touched the spirit. I've found what, you know, I need to keep following this vein. Yeah. Because there's something there for me.
There's something beautiful and there's something honest there. Yeah. I was working on a song with Sarah Morris one time, and I said something, I don't know, probably dumb. And I was like, well, I don't think that's the best line. She's like, Grant, I don't give a damn if it's the best line. Like, is it the most true line? And ever since she said that, I was like, oh, that is such a good perspective to have on it, right? It's just like, is it the most true? And if you're crying about it, you definitely touched on some truth. Because you can't lie. You can't like fake cry in a room. You know what
by
I mean?
Yourself. Totally. Yeah, there's a reason you're crying, and it's not performative because no one else is around.
Exactly. So you know that you struck a nerve. Yeah, that is beautiful, and it encapsulates, you know, the Ross Thorne saga, rather, of like, you're pouring everything into it, man. It's beautiful. It's so cool to see.
Yeah, it's a vulnerable practice, and it's one that I appreciate, and I kind of hate it for that at some points too. You know, like in the song, I don't know if you'll cut it or not, or like try to splice it, but I messed up in the song. You know, yeah. Leave it because like, and if you see me down at Ursa Minor Brewing where I've got my residency, we'll take requests and we bomb all the time. Like I'll fail at songs all the time, and it's kind of fun sometimes, and because like it's like you get a little bit warm, you're like, okay, yep, this is not going that well, and it's like great to be in those positions because there's very little stakes, you know. And the bass player from Salty Dog, some good friends of mine, if you've never seen them, go check them out. They just came out with some new music and will also be at Blue Ox, just like straight up. But bass player for that band, Calzone, we call him, he told me, he was like, playing with you and like seeing you, like, it sounds kind of funny because it sounds like a dig, but it's totally not, because if you know Cal, he's very honest and like just such salt of the earth. He's like, seeing you like fail and like publicly like helped me to like overcome that, you know, like, and to be able to be like, oh, it is okay to forget the words to your songs. It's okay to mess up on and forget a chord or something, you know?
Well, I mean, you watch big names come to town. Pick one. Anytime you see them do something that's not perfect, the audience cheers. It's like they love it. Like, oh, this is real. This is a real moment. This is not over-rehearsed and overproduced. This is a legit moment we're all experiencing together.
It's actually really funny. At the Trampled show, we were playing that song that I just played, and the sound just went, and I was like, what the heck? And everyone's like, is it me? Do we keep playing? Do we stop? And like, we were on such a tight timeline there too. So it was like, okay, they identified it, they isolated it, let's just do that one part again. And we go, and then everybody cheers, you know, like the fact that we were still there in that moment and just being like going with the flow. Like, people love that. People love to see the humanity. And it kind of comes back to that songwriting too. It's like, it's just human.
It's just human. Yeah, that's that's what it boils down to, really, is that it's just human. I had, like, the best question ever. It wasn't. I forgot it. No, it's not your fault, and it definitely probably wasn't the best question ever. Like I said, that ego, man, it gets in the way. So I just you were over there talking, said something really insightful. I'm just thinking in my head, man, he's going to really love this question I'm going to ask, and then I forgot what it was. But all all that to say, so you've had quite a year. Last year you did Trampled. This year we're getting Ross Thorne to Blue Ox. Which everyone, where can the people go vote for that?
At blueoxmusicfestival.org, or I've got links on my socials too. So,
which, and if you don't know what Blue Ox is, one, find that out. Go to Blue Ox because it's an awesome music festival. Salty Dog's going to be there. Superior Siren too from town. Yeah. Who else is Charlie going this year?
I don't think so. Okay. I think those are the two Duluth bands. But like Sierra Farrell and Molly Tuttle, I think are both there, and yeah, that there's some great stuff.
Yeah, it's an incredible set list. It's an incredible time. The festival is just they do a really good job putting it together. They have, if you haven't been to a music festival, it's a great first one to go to, and if you have, it's just awesome. So the idea is blueoxmusicfestival.org. Vote for Ross to get him there. They have the virtual band contest to support Ross. Where else can the people kind of support you or find you coming up here in the next coming, let's say it's April 1st when this comes out?
Yeah. The way that people can find me, if it's April 1st coming out, I got a tour in May. So I'm going on tour with the band The Spine Stealers. Okay. Who won the Blue Ox contest last year. Nice. We're doing a tour. We're going to Milwaukee, Madison, Eau Claire, Minneapolis, and up here. So come catch us out. We've got all the dates listed on our socials and bands in town and Songkick or whatever all those things are. Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, any streaming platform, or come see me at a show, come say hi at the merch table. And
love it. And where can people find you on all the social medias and things?
Yeah, Instagram, ross.thorne, and Ross Thorne Music on Facebook.
Nice. That's incredible. And also, here is my little high horse. Have you listened to the show before, Ross? It's okay if you haven't. You have?
Yeah, I listened to Kyle's episode.
That's a good one. Okay, Kyle's good. He wouldn't make the trip down to Cambridge to come talk to me for 20 minutes, so we had to do it over the phone. I know. Give him some shit about that next time.
I will.
Like, I wasn't good enough for him to drive 3 hours. 3 hours.
Unbelievable.
Come on, dude. But this is my one high horse thing. So Ross has the album Hugo out. There is new music coming out. There's music coming out all of the time. The best thing you can do to support any artist to make this a realistic creative career is to go to the shows and to buy merch. And there is nothing wrong with streaming on Spotify or the things like that. I do it. It's really convenient, and it does help with some things, right? But they don't pay a whole lot. They pay their 0.0003 cents per stream, and it's not enough to support a tour. So the best thing you can do is buy tickets to one of those shows, the Eau Claire, the Milwaukee, Madison. Go vote for him to get to Blue Ox. Buy some merch when you get there, because he has some really badass merch. I've seen it at the merch table. Yeah, it's incredible. You had correct me if I'm wrong, you had like koozies, bandanas, vinyl, and t-shirts. Yeah.
Yep. And stickers.
Yeah, and it's all got really cool designs. He just the same way that he's put, you know, all of this inspiration and intention into his songwriting, it carries over into the art and the merch that you're not buying crap to keep him on the road. It's good quality stuff.
Yeah, and it's mostly locally made stuff. Like the bandanas are designed by Danielle Peterson, who was in Duluth for a while, and they're screen printed down in Minneapolis by a local guy. And and Wayne Misgen, he designed a lot of the shirts and printed them too. So it's a whole supportive effort for the Duluth creative community.
Yeah, which that's a really good point too. The economy of the arts, right? It keeps it all going. So
yeah, we keep each other going.
We do keep each other going. Yeah. It's such a cool thing to see. And man, you won't believe this. It's already been about an hour of our time, right? Yeah, dude, it's a good time. Do you want to play another song for the people before we kind of cut everything off and show them what Ross Thorne is all about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
While I'm tuning up, I'll try to preface this one too. This is a so I mentioned like tabletop gaming, and that's huge for me. My buddy, we're helping him design a new tabletop game. Like
Cones of Dunshire?
Cones of Dunshire, right, yeah. You forgot about the cones. No, but the it's like D&D. It's just an alternative to D&D, but sort of like in the same vein of like role-playing games and whatnot. So we're playtesting that with him and just having fun, just like being like, oh, what if you do this? You know, like the game design is a lot of fun. Yeah. I really enjoy it. And I'm designing a different one on my own too. But this is related to that one. So in that game, I was like, I was playing a bard, which is, for anybody who's listening and doesn't know, is like a performer character. And so that they can be a musician most often. And so I brought my banjo. No one asked me to bring my banjo. I'm like, I'm bringing this damn banjo. And I was like, I'm going to write a song because we're playing a pirate-themed one.
Yeah.
Campaign. And I was like, this is fun. I just learned this is the tuning called sawmill tuning. And it's really conducive to like these like sort of sea shanty sounding pirate songs. And so I started writing one for fun. I was like, oh, this is cool. I can, excuse me, just play this. And then it just like started getting out of hand. I was like, I have no business making this as fun as it is for me right now that I'm writing a full-fledged song for just a simple little campaign here.
Yeah.
But it kind of turned into that. This thing is gets up. And so this is a song called Mariner's Lament. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's...
Good name.
Thank you. I thought so. It's, you know, like this old-time tune. It's like, you know, could be like Edmund Fitzgerald-esque, you know, type of thing. So here it is.
Have it, folks. My interview with the one, the only Ross Thorne out of Duluth, Minnesota. Go and support him in his bid for Blue Ox. It ends March 14th, so this is coming out March 13th, so you've got 24 hours to get it done, to go vote for the man, to send him to Blue Ox. So do what you can. If you hear my cats fighting in the background, I apologize. That's just what they do as soon as I try to record anything. It's kind of their MO. Ted and June are their names. They're the real stars of the show. But that's Ted. He's yelling at June. We don't know why. We don't know why he yells. He just yells. He makes loud screeching noises. Sometimes he moos. It's kind of interesting. But those are my cats. And really, what we want to do today is thank our sponsor of the podcast, Car Concierge. Right. So, here's the deal. We've all bought cars before, right? I mean, and we know that it can be a hassle of a process. So if you need to shop for a new car, but you can't find the time, or, you know, maybe past experiences with shady dealerships and salespeople have made you just avoid starting the search for your new vehicle altogether, well, Car Concierge gets it. That's why they exist, right? Car Concierge will work directly with you to understand what you're looking for in your ideal vehicle and then take the search on for you. That's right. Save endless amounts of time and questions by working with Car Concierge, who will search, find, negotiate, and ultimately deliver your dream car directly to you without you having to step foot in a car dealership. So just visit their website at GoCarConcierge or call 612-662-7788 to get started today. And thank you so much for listening to Glad You're Here. Stay tuned. New episodes dropping every Wednesday. Okay, bye.